from KQED. Hey everyone, from KQED Public Radio, this is another edition of Political Breakdown. I'm Marisa Lagos, politics reporter at KQED.
And I'm Scott Schaefer, KQED's senior politics editor. And today on The Breakdown, she was the only woman in the top tier of gubernatorial candidates, but Delaine Easton finished far back in the pack.
You know, we've been calling it a year of the woman, the middle of the Me Too movement. So we're going to talk about why didn't Delaine Easton do better, and we're going to ask her what she thinks, and hopefully get a peek behind the scenes at some of those debates and other key moments of that long campaign.
That should be fun. We also got a resolution in the San Francisco mayoral election this week. London Breed is president of the Board of Supervisors and now mayor-elect of San Francisco.
Yeah, and it took a little over a week to get these results.
9 days, 8 days, yes.
It was an exciting week, everybody. You know, in San Francisco, we have this ranked choice voting system, which for people outside of city limits means that you pick three choices when you vote, and it makes the counting process much longer. It also makes it really hard to handicap these races.
Oh, totally. Well, you know, just to digress for 1 second, Maine is now using it statewide, and had to rank all seven gubernatorial candidates. Seven!
Which is actually more fair, because three is kind of weird in a bigger...
But it's complicated.
I know. It kind of makes your head explode a little bit when you think about that, plus the top two primary and the electoral college. Like, why is there so much math involved?
A lot of math. But anyway, we sat down with London Breed. She came into KQED today.
And she did.
And a very wide-ranging discussion.
You'll be able to see part of that on television this weekend.
It'll be on KQED Newsroom. Tomorrow night on KQED. But here's a little sneak preview of what she had to say.
So what did you do after you won? Did you get to have like a glass of champagne or anything, you know?
Shoot, I basically was just on the phone with people the whole time. Everyone's calling, your family members are calling. Are you okay? I'm like, yeah, I'm okay. I just won the race.
Until you were behind.
Well, that was...
No, we're talking about this week.
Though. Oh, okay, yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah. I thought you were talking about election night.
Oh, yeah, no.
What was that like? Because you were way ahead and then suddenly, like the last thing about 1 a.m.
Yeah, so that was exciting because there were so many people there and we were way ahead, but everyone was getting ahead of themselves. And I was like, wait, everybody, wait, hold on. Just let's not get ahead of ourselves. And then I got home and it was like, I got the bad news. And I was like, oh, man, okay. And I was just, you know, I was calm about it.
Were you feeling superstitious this week?
Superstitious,
like now. As the votes were being counted?
I just was feeling nervous. Yeah. I was just waiting, and I was like, what are they going to say today? Everybody, just like, probably everyone was refresh.
At 4 o'clock.
Wait. Yes. So it was just like, what time is it? So just waiting around and trying to wish for a better place.
I mean, that must be weird after how, like, intense the campaign is to have this week where you're just sort of...
cooling your heels.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, it was also nice to not have to do, like, 3 or 4 house parties in a row at night, and but it was a relief, so.
After yesterday, you are the mayor-elect now. People treating you differently?
I think people are definitely nicer. It's the honeymoon period.
Yes.
And as soon as I don't fix the right pothole, then it's all over. It's downhill from there. But ultimately, I think people are excited. It feels like a new day in San Francisco. I'm excited. I love the energy. It's amazing. And I am really excited about actually doing the work and getting the job done. And I want people to see a difference. I want them to see a difference on our streets. And that's what I'm really excited about.
Yeah. So we had you on our show Political Breakdown a few months ago. You talked about growing up in the city and your favorite teachers, the French horn.
That you played.
Yeah.
That I don't play anymore.
In all your spare time. But I'm just wondering, like, is there anyone that you've come across during the campaign or since, you know, in the last week who you haven't heard from? Or, like, what's been the coolest interactions you've had sort of with the people you grew up with or grew up around?
Oh, my goodness. The lady who used to help my grandmother take care of us, one of my kindergarten teachers, the person who's the husband, the wife of the person who helped with my fee waivers for college. Just all of these great people, friends from high school, friends from elementary school. One of my friends who has two kids, who basically we started off in kindergarten together.
Wow. Now they're going to be like, London, can I get some 49er tickets?
I'm like, no, the mayor can't do those kinds of things. I can fix a pothole, though, if you need that.
Yeah.
But it's also brought out the best in so many people. And folks are really excited. And I'm just also running into so many people who knew me when I was a kid. I may not have known them, but they're like, oh, I remember your grandmother, and they would tell me stories. So it's been really amazing.
You said yesterday at City Hall that your grandmother always took care of you, even on days when I didn't deserve it.
Yeah.
Were you a bad kid?
I was a very talkative kid.
No. That is shocking.
Yes, I was very talkative, and, you know, yes, I didn't have sometimes the best behavior. But
somebody said you were at Rosa Park Elementary today, and you said, oh, this is where I had my first fight.
Yeah.
And I won, you said.
Yes, yes. I had a few fights in elementary school. But ultimately, again, you know, my teachers, they take you to the side and they say, you're such a smart girl. You can do, you're better than this. And I want you to be better than this. And I want you to promise me that you're going to do better. And that you just didn't want to disappoint your teachers. And so, but then sometimes it would happen again and they still gave you the talk. And that's what I think about. I think about just so many of those teachers and counselors and community members who, even when, you know, I wasn't at my best behavior as a kid, they still didn't give up on me. And I think that's what's important to remember here in San Francisco. As someone who has had those kinds of experiences as mayor, we can't give up on our residents. We can't give up on the people who we know who need us the most.
I'm sure that a lot of people have given you advice over the course of the campaign and since you won. What are some things you have been advised to do? Like, what's the best advice? What's the worst advice?
Let's see. I would say that the best advice is, even when you are having a fight with someone or you're mad at someone or it's ugly one day, the next day it's just time to move on because the business of the city is most important. And so that's really good advice, and I appreciate that. Certain appointments that people have asked me to make, which I thought, no way. There's a lot out there, and I do appreciate it. I will continue to listen, but ultimately, as mayor, it's my decision, and I will make the decision I think that's best for the city.
You feel like you're a decisive person? I mean, some people agonize over making decisions.
It depends on what the decision is. I mean, if you have, for example, when you make a decision about District 5 supervisor, it's an important decision. And sometimes there are candidates that may stand above someone else, but if you have two candidates who are incredible and you're trying to decide which one is going to be the best, I mean, you will agonize. I will agonize over a decision like that versus having just, oh my God, this is the person, and knowing it. I mean, it just really depends.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, London Breed, and we look forward to seeing you in the mayor's office.
Yeah, we'll have you back and we can talk about those first maybe months.
Or you can just come to City Hall.
Okay. Thank you.
That was San Francisco Mayor-elect London Breed, the city's first African-American female mayor. And it was interesting, you know, whatever you think of her politics, she does have such a remarkable personal story. Growing up in the housing projects, ascending to this post, it is truly inspirational.
It is. And, you know, and we saw that. There were people all around KQED who came from downstairs.
You could hear them in the background.
You could hear them in the background. They were in the studio. And just people outside and on the sidewalk wanted to have their picture taken with her. She clearly is an inspiration to a lot of people.
Well, we are going to talk about that and more coming up after a short break with former schools superintendent and gubernatorial candidate Delaine Easton. You are listening to Political Breakdown from KQED Public Radio.
And welcome back to Political Breakdown. I'm Scott Schaefer, along with Marisa Lagos. And here with us now in the studio for the breakdown, a woman
who made the race for governor a little more human with her humor and style and folksy sayings.
Folksy. Delaney Easton, welcome to Political Breakdown.
Wonderful to be with you both.
So we have a lot we want to talk to you about. But first, I know that you tweeted out congratulations to Mayor-elect London Breed today, talking about how difficult it is as a woman, especially a woman of color, to win these races. What's gone through your mind watching this play out and hearing her kind of take this victory lap?
Well, I'm thrilled for London. I think she ran a brilliant campaign, and I will say she is the only female mayor of a city, of the one of the 15 largest cities in America. And in California, we now have two women mayors of our 10 biggest cities, but she's the first of the 15 largest. And it is harder for women, whether they're running for executive positions in big states or executive positions in big cities, it is still harder for women. Remember, the first woman ever elected mayor became mayor only after there was an assassination of the then mayor.
Yeah.
You, I know, live up in Davis, so I don't know how carefully you are watching this particular election, but what's your impression of why she won?
Well, I would have been a fifth-generation San Franciscan if not for an accident of war in history. So I was born in San Diego, but my family's been here a long time, and I do watch San Francisco very closely. And I think she ran a very brilliant campaign. She worked very hard. She got out and told her story, and it is an important story. So I think that the world is changing ever so slightly, but it's still hardest in the big cities and big states. And I think it's a tribute to her hard work, her character, and her wonderful style that she did win.
Well, let's transition to your race, the race for governor. You got into the race fairly early, and it was always thought that you would be a long shot, which turned out to be the case. What made you jump in, and did you feel it was a long shot, or at the beginning did you think, you know, I could really win this?
I did think it was a long shot, but I got in because I was very upset that there were several candidates already in the race, and none was speaking about education in any serious way. And, you know, as the first and still the only woman elected statewide as superintendent of public instruction, obviously education is in my wheelhouse. And I looked at the campaigns, and it was like everything's all fixed. Oh, we have a local control funding formula, and now we don't have to worry about education. When, in fact, we're in the bottom 10 of the 50 states in per pupil spending. We used to be tied with New York. New York is spending twice as much per student as California, more than twice as much. And our schools are lacking counselors, nurses, librarians, among the largest class sizes in America. This is disgraceful. Meanwhile, the way this state got rich was educating its people. So it's not only, I say it's bad economics, but it's also bad culture and character not to put your kids first.
I mean, when you look at the race and the way it ultimately played out, what are the biggest surprises for you? I mean, I think, you know, a year ago sitting here, we would have maybe handicapped that it could have been Villaraigosa, Antonio Villaraigosa, and Gavin Newsom in the top two. Is that the biggest surprise, or were there other things that kind of, took you by surprise?
Well, Antonio said one of his big problems, he'd been out of politics for 5 years in the L.A. Times. Well, I've been out of politics for 15 years. So, I mean, those are problems. But the biggest challenge, I think, is the cost. Mm-hmm. This is a phenomenally expensive process. And the fact that I decided to go corporate free put me at a real competitive disadvantage. But we have to figure out how to not have the best money government money can buy. I mean, this cannot be money-driven. It has to be driven by the values of the people who live in California. And if it continues to be money-driven, we're going to have a problem. I mean, I was the first and for months the only candidate that talked about banning fracking. And even to this minute, one of the candidates said, well, he'd ban future fracking. I guess that means we'd let what was going on go along. And a couple of others said, yeah, they'd get rid of it. But they haven't really made a commitment. And so the power of oil, tobacco, big pharma, you know, driving so many decisions in this state is not in our best interest as a state.
Do you think you were able to push the candidates, at least on the Democratic side, to the left more? Because you were one of the more progressive folks out there. And I think, you know, we've seen someone like Gavin Newsom, who was seen as mayor here as very business friendly, embrace single payer, and some of these other, you know, you have both Haye and Villaraigosa out there talking about early childhood education. Like, do you feel like you had an impact on their platforms?
I absolutely did. And recently, Antonio, in a public forum, said that I had fundamentally changed the conversation, especially when it comes to preschool. That if I had not entered the race, not every candidate would be stepping up to say they were for preschool. preschool and trying to outflank each other on that subject. So,
well, in fact, you know, we watched many of the debates, and one of the things that became clear is that oftentimes you would say something and the other candidates would say, I agree. Let's play an ad that you came up with during the campaign to reflect that.
We've got to, as Delaine says, play offense.
We've got to grow more middle-class jobs. I agree with Delaine.
As Delaine indicated.
As Delaine said.
We do need more revenue for our schools. I agree with Delaine.
You're absolutely right, like Delaine.
Your point is well taken, Delaine, as usual.
But Delaine's right. I mean, it's all about accountability.
Here, here. I agree with the sentiment and the passion and Delaine as well.
You get it right on the head.
You can applaud that. I agree with that.
And in the spirit of Delaine, look, it's a question of leadership.
So you had all of these dudes agreeing with you. I mean, do you think you talked about money already? I mean, how much do you think your gender played into where you ended up in this race and the failure to catch fire?
Well, I mean, it is true. I taught women in politics, so I know way more about this than a lot of people do. And the fact is, I'm the first candidate that's female to run for governor in California that's not a millionaire. I'm the first candidate that, actually got as much traction as I did in some places. But in the end, I couldn't compete financially. And I think we all ought to be do some soul searching about that. Because in reality, when you look at New York, Illinois, Florida, and California, none has ever had a woman governor. And the bigger the state, the harder it is to elect women, just like the bigger the city. Having said that, one of the big issues is the cost of running for the top job in state government. And I just wasn't anywhere near where the other candidates were in terms of fundraising.
One of the things that made your candidacy interesting is that this is a Me Too moment. It is, in a way, a year of the woman. And there were moments, it seemed to me, especially earlier in the campaign, where you had opportunities to speak up as a woman and be critical of, say, Gavin Newsom and Antonio Villaraigosa, who both had issues around, say,
infidelity,
you know, fidelity. Yeah, exactly. That was the word I was going to say. You know, I'm wondering what held you back, because it seems like in mid to late May, you kind of let it rip.
Well, I really do think people know what's going on, and most people do know, and it's almost like you almost don't need to say it. It's the elephant in the room, because they were so famous in terms of their, or infamous in terms of their transgressions. And so
inappropriate in any way to bring it up?
I was trying to take the high road most of the time, but, you know, finally somebody asked me, and I said, well, of course. I mean, integrity is one of the things we ought to be looking for when we elect people. And I do believe that it's a problem. And having said that, we also need to have somebody step up and say, from now on, we're not going to allow this kind of treatment of women in whether it's public or private positions. There has to be a lot more nimbleness about responding.
I'm curious, when you made those statements, in that I think it was a debate or a public forum of something, did Gavin Newsom or Antonio Villaraigosa, did they say anything, or did they give you a cold shoulder afterwards, or did you get any, you know, sense that they were, you know, annoyed that you had brought it up that way?
I don't think so. I think they, you know, I was answering a question, and I really believe that both of them have done their mea culpas. I just, you know, the proof of the pudding is in the eating. I hope they all have really adopted this new approach to life and never again are going to make these inappropriate advances, and certainly not use public money to buy their silence. That's like...
What are you referring to there?
Well, I mean, in the case of the mayor of San Francisco, gave public money that had never been given to anybody before or since for some treatment that was supposedly brought about because of this transgression. And I just say, you know, in truth, we don't know in all of the history of all the candidates, so I can't say that he's the only one. I will say that I think it's really time for people to say, if you want to be in public life, then you better agree to play by the rules. You take an oath to uphold and defend a constitution of a state and a nation, both of which are absolutely clear that you're supposed to be on the straight and narrow when it comes to morality.
I want to remind our listeners that you're listening to Political Breakdown from KQED Public Radio. And tonight, our guest is Delaine Easton, former state school superintendent, former lawmaker, and just ran for governor, and did not come in the top two. Gavin Newsom did. You just had some sort of harsh words for him. I'm curious, do you plan on endorsing him? Will you support him?
Yes, I'm planning on having a conversation with him, and my plan is to endorse him. I do believe he knows more about state government. I think having somebody who's never been in government before step up to do this isn't working very well in the presidency, and I don't think it'll work very well in the governor's office. Having said that, though, I really do hope he will, in fact, lift up California. And it cannot just be about supporting business. It has to be about lifting up our children. It can't be, well, now we have local control, that's up to the locals, mm-hmm. when they're so dramatically underfunded. And the elephant in the room is preschool, K-12, and higher ed all needs a bigger share of the pie. And if we can't get more locally, then we need to get more from the state. Either way, education is the future of any state or any country. The competitiveness today is far more important when it relates to education mm-hmm. than it has ever been in the history of the world.
So I want to move you to something maybe a little like lighter, which is I'm wondering what it was like backstage at these debates, being the only woman there. Who was fun? Who was friendly? Who was not? Like, was there any interesting moments on the campaign trail with the other candidates?
Most of them were very cordial and polite. You know, I most of them were surrounded by men. My staff tended to be more female than the other staff, but at least in the governor's race, I think some of the other candidates have more women on staff. But the truth is that I just found everybody was pretty appropriate, I would mm-hmm. say, is the way I'd look at it.
Who would you have a beer with?
I'd have a beer with Antonio, with Gavin, with John Chung, I think.
Just the Democrats.
Well, you know, honestly, beer is kind of a Democratic beverage, right?
How about some Chardonnay?
Yeah. I could definitely have some Chardonnay as well. And so I'm in a few wine clubs myself. So.
Nice.
You know, the conventional wisdom is that John Cox can't win. Willie Brown and others have said that's probably true. But on the other hand, you know, Gavin Newsom has some weaknesses, and John Cox has some strong points and positions.
And Donald Trump is our president.
And Donald Trump is our president, which, you know, is helped him get into the top two, but could be not so helpful going forward. What do you think is ahead in that campaign?
I do think that Gavin has a great advantage in terms of the ethics and values of the people of California. This is a society that has evolved and is a state of immigrants. It does have a lot of appreciation for the risk-taking entrepreneurial spirit that is immigration. And most of us have, whether our families came here 5 generations ago or last month, we do have an appreciation, in fact, for the entrepreneurial spirit of immigration. And I think a lot of people who used to be, let's say when I got elected superintendent, we were still a majority Republican state. Remember that year, the 5 of the 8 constitutional officers were Republicans, 86.
And, vaguely.
And we lost the assembly that year because Pete Wilson went after the immigrants. Ironically, his efforts to go after the immigrants with 187, 209, and 227 turned the state blue.
Do you think there's a risk for Democrats and maybe the sanctuary state law or laws that are now being sued over by the Trump administration? I'm wondering if you think it's possible to overreach as Democrats. They have had a supermajority up there in both houses, obviously a Democratic governor. Do you think, you know, is it possible that perhaps the party has gone beyond where people really are comfortable?
I'm worried about the party under-delivering more than overreaching. There's a lot of good talk out there, but who's going to put their money where their mouth is? And they talk a lot about how we're supporting families, and they talk a lot about how we're going to build more housing. But in fact, they get these wild suggestions. We're going to build 500,000 houses a year. Well, let me just tell you, the most we ever built in 1 year was 324,000, and we don't have enough plumbers and carpenters and bricklayers and electricians to do 500,000, thank you very much. So you better talk about ramping up career education as well as how many houses you're going to build.
Well, and that kind of brings up another issue, which is health care. And, you know, people were sort of falling all over themselves, especially Newsom. You know, you also chimed in
been about single-payer health care, which many people feel is not really practical for a whole number of reasons. We don't need to delve too deeply into the issue. But I'm just wondering, were there things like that that you felt were you were almost required to say because of some of the constituencies in the Democratic Party?
No, I actually believe that one of the genius of the Democratic Party was that they were for Social Security and then they were for Medicare. And you may remember everybody said Medicare was going to bankrupt the country. And now Donald Trump is going to try to say it is. What may bankrupt the country is big tax cuts for the very richest Americans. But if we don't have Medicare, you're going to see a revolt in this state and this country. So I think what I'm worried about is that Gavin promised on single payer and then took $1 million from Blue Shield, took a bunch of money from the California Medical Association.
They endorsed him along with the nurses.
Yeah, and he waffled at one point, and then he said, no, he's for single payer. But
You think he really believes it?
He better put his money where his mouth is, because if he doesn't, people are going to say you didn't tell us the truth.
Well, I mean, that is one of the interesting things I think that Republicans have a valid point on in this election, which is this idea that Democrats broke it. If you think that the state is broken in some of these ways, when we talk about poverty and housing and homelessness, I mean, is that is some of this just a pendulum issue, do you think?
Well, look, this is the fifth largest economy in the world. Let's remember that. John Cox doesn't want to talk about how powerful this economy is, how amazingly it is achieved. And it's
ahead. We're ahead of the UK.
We're ahead of the UK, but they have 25 million more people. So that means we're more productive. The reality is the productivity of this state is amazing. But we have to knuckle down, deal with infrastructure, work on the education of our kids, make sure families have safe housing that is affordable. And we also have to look one another in the eye and say, is it really very smart to have people that are living on the street show up at the emergency room where we're going to cost tens of thousands of dollars to give them emergency treatment and then kick them back on the street again?
I wonder, we're getting short on time, but I wonder what you think of this Three Californias ballot measure that Tim Draper is pushing. He says it would make public education better to have smaller states.
Well, there's nothing automatic about making public education better because the state is smaller. I mean, New York has great education. It's a big state. So,
Mississippi's a small one.
Yeah, Mississippi's a small one and it's not so good. But I think it's a matter of values of the leadership. It's not a matter of what size it is. I mean, for heaven's sakes, we don't say he's a better man because he's tall. so let's be clear here. It's about what we do with our resources. And we have to, a bunch of people come out of a depression and war, did the right thing by one generation. And this one that's rich, rich beyond all imaginings, hasn't done enough for its next generation.
So what is next for you? What's coming up?
Well, I'm really glad that I got reengaged. I feel better than I felt in years. I'm on fire. I'm going to fight for kids and their education. I'm going to fight to elect more women and progressives. And I'm going to fight to make people put their money where their mouth is when they run for public office. I've always been involved with progressive politics. So I'm a common cause League of Women Voters person, as well as a feminist who's fought for electing more women. And obviously, I'm going to fight for the kids and their education. That's all I know how to do.
Well, we could use more women in the state house. We have a pretty dismal record there right now.
Yeah, we only, 30% is supposed to be the magic threshold, and we only had one two-year period where we were there. We're at 23% or a little under 23% right now. And get more women, you get more invested in education, families, health care, and seniors. Pretty good stuff.
Thank you for coming in, Delaney Easton. It was a pleasure.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That's going to do it for this edition of Political Breakdown. If you like the show, you can listen again, find past episodes, or, listen to them again and again on Apple Podcasts, and you can rate and review and subscribe to The Breakdown there, too.
Our producer is Guy Marzorati. Katie Orr is our Sacramento reporter, and our engineer is Seal Muller.
Ethan Lindsay is our managing editor. Holly Kernan is our vice president of news. I am Marisa Lagos, and you can find me on Twitter at @mlagos.
And I'm Scott Schaefer. Follow me on Twitter. I'm @ScottSchaefer. That is a wrap for this week's Political Breakdown from KQED. We'll see you next time.